This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Agriculture Department defines food deserts as areas where many of the residents live in poverty and have limited access to affordable and nutritious food options. The city of Cincinnati says several local neighborhoods fit the USDA's definition of a food desert, lacking sufficient grocery stores and farmers markets able to provide healthy food to residents. Here to talk about initiatives, programs, and policies to help deal with food deserts are Cincinnati Development Fund CEO Jeannie Gallagher, Cincinnati City Manager Harry Black, and Director of Cincinnati's Department of Community and Economic Development, Oscar Bedoya. And later in the show, we'll look at efforts at the neighborhood level for overcoming food deserts. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can join us on Facebook or Twitter. And Harry, Jeannie, and Oscar, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Happy to be here.
Pleasure.
Yeah, Harry, a lot of people take grocery stores and access to good food for granted. But how big of a problem is this for the city of Cincinnati?
I think it's not just a challenge for the city of Cincinnati. It's a challenge for just about every single urban area in the country. And people are looking at it. We're looking at it. But I think at the end of the day, in order for us to deal with these food disparities, availability disparities, just like any other disparity that we're dealing with, will require ultimately some really extraordinary solutions, which means that we've got to really put our thinking caps on and we've got to link up with other organizations. We've got to leverage our collective resources. But we first and above all, we're going to have to maximize our overall innovativeness and creativity.
So how do we do that? How do we maximize all the resources that we do have?
Well, one of the things that we did last year as part of our inaugural Engage Cincy Challenge Grant program, we did have a recipient who was food-related. The Camp Washington Art and Mobile Produce submission won one of the five grants, and their ideas about not only providing and connecting people to food sources in distressed areas, but also awareness and education. That's something that we are going to build on moving into the future. And obviously, Oscar is here to talk about some more policy-related things that we have been able to jointly pursue with the mayor and the city council.
Mm-hmm. Oscar, which neighborhoods are considered to be food deserts in Cincinnati?
Yeah, that's a good question. So within our policy, we actually define a food desert, and that's based on, as you led with, the Department of Agriculture has an atlas. And so based on a number of different tests, access to fresh food as well as income defines the area. So I think there was a study that was done in 2013 that said about 20% of the areas within the 52 neighborhoods qualified as food deserts.
So 20%, that much?
Yeah.
Yeah. Particular neighborhoods?
Yeah, I mean, one that I'd like to highlight is obviously Avondale. The administration just recently announced a project that we're financing and will take advantage of one of the policies we created, the grocery store policy, to lower the overall cost of doing business to incentivize the grocery stores. So Avondale is obviously has a food desert. They had lost a grocery store that was, had closed, and now, we're very excited that potentially next year we'll have a new grocery store that will come online.
Mm-hmm. Jeannie, what kind of impact does this have on the neighborhoods that they're considered to be food deserts? How is this affecting them?
Well, there are very clear correlations between lack of access to healthy food and health-related illness, diet-related illness and disease. So as was said earlier, according to a study that the Interact for Health Foundation did a few years back, as many as 25% of Cincinnati's residents lack access to healthy food. So it is a very big problem, and one that, as Harry said, we're looking to solve in a variety of ways. We, Cincinnati Development Fund, applied for and received some federal funding back in 2012 to help put together a loan fund to finance retail endeavors in food desert and low supermarket access neighborhoods. But that's only a very small part of the solution. There are so many things like the mobile food trucks that Camp Washington proposed. Findlay Market actually operates such a food truck in Price Hill, Walnut Hills, and Evanston. The information can be found on their website. And in addition to just having the access for the produce, they also participate in a produce perks program where people can get $2 worth of produce for $1 worth of food assistance or SNAP benefits. So there are some really wonderful things happening. And, you know, what we've really learned from being involved in the bricks and mortar supermarket part of the solution is that that isn't going to be the solution for every neighborhood. In some cases, the mobile food trucks make a lot more sense, and other innovative initiatives that we haven't even begun to explore.
What I would add to that, and she's absolutely correct, the last year was our inaugural year for our Engage Cincy Challenge Grant Program. Overwhelming success, more than 200 applications submitted for that. What we're thinking seriously about for this upcoming year in terms of Engage Cincy is to actually dedicate that to addressing and focusing in on this food desert issue, actually. So all submissions would have to come up with something innovative out of the box. I think that we're doing a lot of things today, but to deal with these types of disparities will require extraordinary solutions. We're not there yet, but I think the pieces are in place to help get us there.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Oscar, what about the benefits of grocery stores and reducing food deserts beyond just the health benefits that would come from that? What are the ripple effects?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So I think from my standpoint, helping to funnel investment into the neighborhoods from a community and economic development standpoint, it's about walkable and livable communities. And as a big part of that is amenities. And so having the amenity of being able to walk outside and go to a grocery store and provide, or purchase food is a big plus. And so we want to see more of that in our neighborhoods. And I think that'll create a more thriving ecosystem related to, walkable communities.
What kind of economic impact does this have?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just at a very basic level, it's jobs, right? And so some of the information we were looking at as we created this policy were, most of the workforce that work in these urban markets actually walk to work or use transit. And so it's creating opportunities. It's, spending money within these neighborhoods and keeping the investment within the city limits.
Gina, you were talking about the fund that's been developed for this. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, under the leadership of our First Lady, Michelle Obama, healthy food and access to healthy food has been one of her issues ever since 2008. So the federal government reached out to the Community Development Financial Institutions Fund, which we are our local CDFI, Community Development Financial Institution, and they made available through congressional approval a bundle of capital that was available for us to borrow and relend for this purpose. So we took that initiative as a result of our involvement in the city-led Healthy Food Task Force that was convened around 2010. So we reached out, and on that task force, there were a group of community leaders who met for several years. I know someone from the Center for Closing the Health Gap will be on the second half of the program. They were very instrumental in the task force, as were academics and civic leaders, health professionals. So it was a real comprehensive effort to look at various solutions and look at best practices in other cities across the country. I sometimes get envious because we participate in the national conversation on healthy food, which the Pew Charitable Trust hosts every year in Washington, D.C. And there are so many cities that have a lot deeper resources, than we have here, particularly Philadelphia, which is the home of the food trust. So they've really kind of led this. So I don't want to sound like sour grapes, but they're more evolved. They've been at this for much longer than we have, right? And they have a lot more people at the table helping. So I think that, we learn a lot by participating in these national forums and learn how other communities are doing interesting things and try to bring some of those ideas back to the city of Cincinnati.
Don't you think, given time, we'll catch up to Philadelphia?
Heck yeah. Well, in so many other ways, we're so far ahead of them, right? But they have the food trust there, and actually the CDFI Trade Association is based there. I don't really know how all that came about, but they have a lot of deep resources for community development finance in Philadelphia. So, but the people from the food trust have been very helpful. In fact, they were advisors to the city's task force, and they've advised the state of Ohio, who, and that's something I definitely wanted to mention, that the state of Ohio just in March committed dollars to this issue statewide and are working with our colleagues, a statewide community development financial institution called the Ohio Finance Fund up in Columbus, and they actually have grant dollars available to support some of these grocery stores that are opening up in food deserts and low supermarket access neighborhoods. So we have gotten some grant money for some of our projects here and look forward to continuing working with a statewide fund.
Okay, so what we have here is called the Cincinnati Fresh Food Retail Financing Fund, right?
Right.
Okay. And how many projects has this helped fund so far?
So far, we've closed four loans. They range from the Clifton Natural Food Store to the a food pantry in Lower Price Hill that's part of the Lower Price Hill Community School. We have closed a loan for the Avondale Town Center, a pre-development loan. We closed a loan for the new supermarket that's going in at Findlay Market, the Epicurean Mercantile Company. And we've closed a loan for the Findlay Market Commercial Kitchen, so which is not a retail food outlet, but it's helping to incubate food entrepreneurs. And with their partnership with the store at Findlay Market called Dirt, they're bringing locally grown produce and making it more available to all of our community.
So you're starting to have an impact already with this.
Yes. We've lent about $2.5 million so far. And we're still working on several other loans. The Apple Street Market is one project that we've been working with for several years. And we plan to do more as Avondale Community Center moves forward, Avondale Town Center, that is.
Harry, how do you think Cincinnati does as a whole compared to other cities in dealing with this particular issue?
I think that there are going to be one or two cities such as Philadelphia. I know that my previous city, Baltimore, has done quite a bit in terms of this area. But I would say that Cincinnati is probably more of the norm. However, we have interest in this area. It's a critical area. You know, as was stated earlier, you know, not having equal access to food sources creates other problems. And it's something that I am committed to focusing in on. And we will be pursuing some initiatives in this area, which hopefully I think could put us in the forefront along with some of these other cities. But to answer your question, barely a handful of cities at this point are really far along in this area. Many are just beginning to tap into the potential benefits of really aggressively pursuing this area.
I wanted to add, Mark, that another reason that Philadelphia is looked at as kind of the leader in this issue is because they're fortunate to have a local grocer. They have a grocery store chain that has been operating for three generations, and the current CEO, when Michelle Obama started talking about this food access issue, he really paid attention and said, I want to be part of the solution. And having a grocer who dug in and figured out how to profitably serve urban communities mm-hmm. that are food deserts, I mean, his model is remarkable. And even though he's a for-profit grocery store and he does very, very well, he actually set up a nonprofit affiliate that we've tapped into and Apple Street Market has tapped into to learn how to operate efficiently. And it comes down to a lot of things, where you hire from, how you train, but there's a difference in the operating budget for an urban store versus a suburban store, and knowing how to do it right is part of the solution. And he's been, you know, they're very fortunate to have him there. Unfortunately, we tried. He's not interested in opening up any stores in Cincinnati.
We speaking of local grocers, Bloomberg is quoting Kroger's CEO in an interview they did this week where he says that Kroger's been working with the city for years on opening a much-anticipated downtown Cincinnati grocery store and will definitely get it done at some point. So, Harry and Oscar, I just wondered if you had any comment on where things stand with that.
I'll start out, and Oscar can obviously jump in. There ultimately will be a grocery store in downtown Cincinnati. What brand that will be is to be determined. But there's significant interest and commitment to pursuing the ultimate placement of an urban-oriented grocery store right in downtown somewhere.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think our policy related to the incentive includes the downtown area. We specifically drafted that to make sure that that was included because we feel that that is a need for the residents of Cincinnati. I think as it relates to Kroger, I mean, they've made some very strategic acquisitions recently in purchasing grocery store chains that have operated in urban markets. So we're very excited about that.
We will continue our conversation about food deserts after this, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me to talk about local initiatives, programs, and policies to deal with food deserts are Cincinnati Development Fund CEO Jeannie Gallagher, Cincinnati City Manager Harry Black, and Director of Cincinnati's Department of Community and Economic Development, Oscar Bedoya. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Oscar, we were talking some about this earlier, that the city has a program, I believe it's a pilot program at this point.
That's correct.
The Grocery Attraction Program. So tell us what's going on with that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think trying to use our existing tools within our toolbox, complementing Jeannie's efforts as well as the state's, realizing that, you know, there's a higher cost of doing business within an urban area. We developed a policy that potentially partnering with the Port of Cincinnati, Greater Cincinnati Energy Alliance to really lower the overall cost of doing business. And so that could be through energy savings, a sales tax exemption, and then a property tax abatement, as well as permitting fees and expediting those fees or expediting those permits to bring a project to.
So there are various incentives involved in this to get grocers to do they have to commit to an area that's designated a food desert, or do they just have to?
That's exactly right. It's targeted to food deserts.
Now, when did this program start?
We released something earlier this year and have been actively working with different developers and communities. As we suggested earlier, Avondale is the first one to take advantage of this, and we think that grocery store will come online in within a year, the next 12 months.
So, fresh food retailing, it can be kind of a tricky business.
Definitely.
There's some risk involved in that. It's a complicated business. So for this program, how will you vet applicants for it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're going to be partnering with a number of different public institutions, mainly the Department of Public Health, as well as our own team to be doing underwriting based on project need and the community need. And so within the policy, we describe how that framework will work, but it needs to fit within the definition of a fresh food vendor. There's a number of different tests there. And then, again, based on geographical area and then access to grocery stores would be the big test.
So there's a definition for a fresh food vendor. Do they have to be a certain size or?
Yeah. So the square footage, I think, is around 7,000 to 5,000 as a minimum. We do have some exceptions based on, again, project and neighborhood need, as well as proximity to existing grocery stores.
Mm-hmm. And Harry, how will you measure whether this program has been successful? I know it's kind of early to be talking about where you've gone at this point with it, but how will you look back on it eventually and say, yeah, the pilot's worked, we should keep it going?
Yeah, I think this, as any other initiative, it's about trying to find ways to move the needle. And I think we obviously will have performance metrics associated with this. We will probably delve into this some in terms of our STAT program. But the biggest thing is if we can impact the food disparity situation in such a way that we use that to help improve the overall quality of life of the people that live in these economically depressed areas in terms of better health results, you know, better choices, things of that nature. So there'll be a quantitative way to follow and track this, but then there'll be some other things that we'll need to look at that will take time to really discern.
Any idea how long the program is going to run at this point?
I think to be determined. I think there's a lot of there's a huge need currently in the market, and until we feel like we've made some great traction, I think.
Yeah, again, I think the grocery policy and pilot program that Oscar's mentioned is just one piece. Again, as I said earlier, when you're dealing with trying to move the needle with respect to any kind of a disparity, it will require extraordinary solutions and extraordinary efforts. So bricks and mortar is a part of it. Urban agriculture is going to have to be a part of it. How we utilize information technology in terms of establishing networks that help to connect people to food sources, as well as building those community networks at the same time.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join in our conversation. Toby called. He's talking about there's a real lack of places downtown that people can get fruit, veggies, fresh salad, that kind of thing. He says, although there are plenty of restaurants, and he's wondering if you're, and excuse me, Toby is she, she's wondering if you're looking at more unusual ways to serve these areas, such as fruit and veggie sellers and trucks, small stands, that kind of thing.
Again, as I said, our Engage Sensi Challenge Grant program was an overwhelming success last year. Looking at dedicating this upcoming year's Engage Sensi Grant program to dealing with this food desert issue. And that's the whole idea. We're going to be reaching out for innovative ideas and solutions that we as individuals may not be able to come up with. But if we can put our collective intelligence together, we can perhaps figure this thing out in a really, really smart way to have an answer for your caller.
Ginny, what do you think in terms of solutions to this? What are some of the things that you see that need to be done?
Well, again, I think the things that we're doing currently are going to help. What we've also learned from getting involved in this space is that the solutions don't happen overnight. It takes a very long time to identify the right location, to put together the financing, to get a grocery store operator. So as I said, we applied for our funding in 2012, and we're just now, we've just now deployed all of the money that we received, and we still have the original projects we were hoping to fund, Avondale and Apple Street and Bond Hill. They're just now getting ready. Well, Bond Hill hasn't even happened yet, but they're just now ready to actually break ground this year. So if anything, what we've learned is that the bricks and mortar solution is the most difficult and the slowest of all the solutions. So as Toby suggested, the mobile food vendors, that's a really great way that a lot of low-income communities across the country are dealing with the lack of access to fresh food issue, and it's pretty cost-effective. So, and I mentioned earlier that Findlay Market operates several. Harry mentioned that Camp Washington pitched one for their community. So there are communities that are doing initiatives like that, having, community farmers markets and things of that nature.
So we were telling me earlier about Philadelphia. How many farmers markets do they have in Philadelphia, Jeannie? It's a half dozen at least, I think.
It's quite a few. Another area where they have a lot I've learned from my national involvement is in New Orleans. And I was recently visiting a friend in New Orleans, and they have a truck that drives down their street. Like when I was a kid, we had Mr. Softee. They have fresh produce coming down the street at around the same time every day. And it was fascinating to watch how excited all the residents got and come running out of their house when they hear the music. So, there are things like that that we're seeing. I know in Chicago I saw a nonprofit that took a lot of the non-utilized school buses and made colorful produce trucks that went neighborhood to neighborhood on old school buses. So, there's a lot of neat things going on across the country. But it's also important to note that the access is one thing, education and having a way to measure the ultimate health comes, because that's what it really comes down to. So, I think the interesting conversation on the second half of your show with the group Interact for Health is helping to measure this, but the Center for Closing the Health Gap, that's kind of their focus to really look at and measure what difference it makes when people can change their dietary habits.
And once you build it, you have to educate people, this is here and this is available for you. Oscar,
correct.
Did you want to?
Yeah, no, I'm just going to add to Jeannie's comments related to kind of trends within the market. You know, having recently, not recently, but you know, within the last year, moved from New York. In New York, everyone, you know, orders everything online. And so I think we're cognizant of the fact that the market is changing and being agile to that. And so using technology is going to be another way we address this.
Mm-hmm. Harry, any final thoughts on this?
Other than to just say thank you for having us on. This is a very, very critical topic, and we are excited about pursuing it.
Is there anything people can do? There obviously, the city's making a concerted effort in this area. Is there anything individuals can do to help alleviate food deserts?
I think that once we're at a particular point, again, as I said, a lot of this is going to be non-brick and mortar related, a lot of community networking and so forth, just to be prepared to volunteer and to help jump in and help out at the appropriate time when we come and we ask for their help.
Harry, Jeannie, and Oscar, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks. Pleasure.
Thank you.
Cincinnati Development Fund CEO Jeannie Gallagher, Cincinnati City Manager Harry Black, and Director of Cincinnati's Department of Community and Economic Development, Oscar Bedoya. And coming up, we'll have a look at community-based efforts to deal with food deserts. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.